Stephen Speak Extra Speak. A little more of everything and nothing. Don't forget to subscribe. Hello, welcome to Extra Speak. And I am Stephen. How the hell are you? I'm going to say that more often. In the last episode, it felt good to ask you. So I hope you will. Again, in the last episode, I was saying the story about how I was applying for the army, and it all went tits up, so to speak. Yeah. So I'll tell you that story. So my application for the army went through successfully. I passed all the tests, and the plan was for me to join the Royal Engineers, because even though I desperately wanted to be an Apache helicopter pilot, the army careers officer basically said, you know what, only so many people become pilots, and even fewer become Apache helicopter pilots. And even though he appreciated my absolute gusto for saying that I would be the best damn Apache helicopter pilot the army had ever seen, even though I've never even been in a helicopter, still to this day, he basically said, you know what, have a backup career, you know, do your basic training, go into a regiment, do some training, then apply for a transfer to the Army Air Corps for the training for the pilot. And he said, then if you bugger it up, or you're not very good, or he says, you know, you don't have the talent, at least you've got something to fall back on. So the plan was to go into the REME, so the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers, because I've always liked design and stuff like that. So the plan was to go into them, do my basic training, transfer to them, do something for a couple of years. I think I chosen like chartered surveyor and stuff like that. So it sounds quite boring, to be honest, looking back. But like at the time, I was thinking, yeah, that'd be ace, you know, they're on loads of money. And the army were doing like retention things at the time. So if you picked up a skill, like they would kind of pay you a little bonus to stay in the army and use that skill within the army. And they also tied you into a bit of a contract as well, so they're not going to spend loads of money on you, training you, and then let you bugger off to civilian life. Yeah, so that was the plan. So I was going to join the REME and all that jazz, and they were booking me in for my... The last thing I had to get through was a fitness test. So I went to my doctor, he signed me off and said, yep, that's fine. And I was training, I was running and stuff, and I didn't think I'd pass it with flying colours, but I thought I could pass it. Because I've never been the fittest guy, but I really tried for that, because it was obviously my dream. It was my dream to be in the army. My father had been a paratrooper, my granddad was one of the very first paratroopers. He transferred from the Cheshire Regiment, as it was then, and got conscripted into the newly formed Parachute Regiment, which is a very proud thing for me to say that my granddad was kind of one of the first elite soldiers. So I wanted to fall in that kind of ilk. I got a call one day from the Army Careers Office, and they were saying about my medical notes, and it'd come back saying that I was asthmatic. And I said, yeah, it's fine, don't worry about it. Like, you know, my doctor signed me off for that, though, hadn't he? So it's fine. I've not had anything. You have to be clear for 4 years, basically. And I said, I've not had anything for like 4.5, 5 years. I'm fine. Like, I'm good. I'm strong. Lungs are good. And he said, well, you had inhalers prescribed. My mum's always been quite protective of my asthma, because her mum died of like severe lung problems and asthma and stuff like that. So, you know, she's always been protective, and she said to me, like, when my asthma inhalers like kind of went out of date, she said, you know, you really need to get some new ones just in case. And I did, and I did. But the day the army officer phoned, he never actually told me that on the phone, what I just told you. I was tidying my bedroom out, and I actually had thrown my inhalers away in the box, because I thought, I don't need you anymore, threw them away, and he phoned me up and said, can you come down to the Army Careers? So I tottered down, walked all the way there, and that's when he gave me that information. I don't know why he couldn't have told me on the bloody phone, because I would have taken the inhalers out of the dustbin and produced them as evidence that I'd not used them, and then everything would have been okay. However, I'd thrown them in the bin, walked all the way down to the Army Careers office, which was like a 20-minute walk, waited for him to see me. He then tells me this, and he goes, well, go get them out of the bin then. I was like, well, it's bin day. And as I was leaving house, I put the bin out, and the bin men were in my street. So that kind of buggered it all up. And I think this was like the August or so. And he said, right, he says, we got you penciled in for your fitness test, like in the October for that intake. He says, so if you pass that, pretty much you're straight in, really. And I got the letter. I can't remember if it was exactly on my birthday, but it was the night I was going out for my birthday, for my 19th birthday. And the letter arrived on Her Majesty's service. I was very excited, thinking, you know, this is it. You know, they trust me, they believe I've not taken them. He said he was going to write the letter saying, Steve's a very honest chap, and I believe him. I opened it up, And it started off like, you know, with the Dear John letter. Dear Stephen, thank you for applying. Blah, blah, blah. You've passed with flying colours. You've passed this with flying colours. We think you'd be a great asset to the army. However, our medical chief thinks it's too much of a risk to let you in without evidence that you've not got over your asthma. There has to be 4 years gap. You're okay to apply in 2.5 years' time. And you can hear the disappointment in my voice. It upsets me thinking of it. And I went out and got absolutely smashed. Like, the most drunk I have ever, ever, ever been. Anyone that was with me on that night out who listens to this can attest to how very, very drunk I was. I proposed to my girlfriend. I jumped in a hedge. Someone had to stop me jumping in a river. I fell down a set of stairs, smashing all the bloody pictures on the stairwell in this pub as I went. I collapsed several times. I was face down in a car park, literally eating the floor. My girlfriend at the time wouldn't even let me go to her house to stay with her. Rightly so. I was an absolute mess. But after a lot of alcohol, I was a happy mess. I've never been like a violent drunk or anything like that, but I got home. My brother came for me. And I don't remember half the journey on the way home. I just remember him like kind of giggling to me, thinking, oh my God, you're smashed. And when I got home, my dad was waiting for me. But I just didn't care. The mindset I was in, it was like, you know, my world's been changed and I don't care. But I was happy about it. And my dad's quite a big guy, as I've said before. And he took me in the living room, was like, sit down. And I think he was expecting to have this massive chat with me, like, you know what, you've got your brother out of bed, and your mum's worried, and I'm worried, and it's bloody 1:30 in the morning, and he started, like, having a bit of a rant at me, and I was, like, leathered. Like, imagine him sat opposite on, like, a single chair, and I'm on the edge of the settee, and I'm leaning on the settee, and he's leaning in at me, like, proper furious, and I go, dad, stop, and he's like, what? I said, let me say something, and I lean into his face, and with a finger pointed outwards, I poked him on the nose and went, like, frigging Bongo the Clown or something. I thought my brother was going to implode with laughter. He was, like, trying not to laugh because he was like, holy shit. How my dad didn't just belt me right there and then, I don't know. I think he was kind of wanted to laugh as well, but he was obviously, like, he was a bit incredulous to it. And he went, right, I'm fucking going to bed. And he just went to bed. And he said to me, brother, feed him tea and toast, basically. And I just remember vividly sat on the living room floor, my brother just constantly like conveyor belting me toast to sober me up. And I was eating toast and drinking tea. And me and my brother had quite a nice time, actually. Well, I remember it being a nice time. My brother was probably pissed off because he was looking after his drunk younger brother. But I just remember watching these weird Japanese films at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was loving life, to be fair. Apart from literally having the worst news ever. But, you know, alcohol does weird things to you. But yeah, but that's the funny thing was, and the next morning, oddly enough, I didn't even have a hangover. And I think my dad was even more disappointed about that. And he literally said the next morning, he says, you're lucky I didn't knock your lights out last night. He says, I was so angry with you. He says, but it was pretty funny. But yeah, I vaguely remember it. And yeah, but I woke up fresh as daisy the next day. And ate a massive bowl of cornflakes. And my dad was nearly sick looking at me, like eating this massive bowl of cornflakes. And he was just like, I don't know how you can do that. Anyway, there you go. There's a funny, sad story. But yeah, you know, it's one of them things that I tell people about my dad and about when drunk stories come up. So yeah, so now you know. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Stephen Speak Extra Speak. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe.